Annette Moody is the Group IT Governance Director for Serco. When an executive first asked Annette to share her personal experience of living with paralysis, she wasn't sure it would resonate with anyone. She didn't think there was value in looking back and questioned why her story would be interesting. But when she finally shared it, the response was remarkable. It opened up a powerful conversation, enabling others to share their own experiences and leading to the creation of Serco Unlimited. This is the network that has had a powerful role in helping to improve the business, its policies, its practices, procedures, by learning directly from its own people. In this episode, Annette talks about how sharing our stories supports so many people with disabilities that come behind us. Annette Moody, I have been so looking forward to this conversation. And as we get into our groove today, can we start by maybe you offering your thoughts about why the subject of inner confidence matters so much to those people who are going to be listening in today?
I think it matters because being disabled is challenging in its own right. But what comes with it is also all of the challenges of normal life. So in some ways, I think you kind of almost feel when you're first disabled that the rest of life is not as important. But then once you kind of get over the shock and you get into being disabled, then you suddenly realize you still have all of the other challenges that everybody else has, plus you're disabled. So if you think about the challenges of life around career, family relationships, money, anything that challenges everybody else, you have all of those, plus all of the challenges of coming to terms with being disabled in an able-bodied society. So if you don't have inner confidence and resilience, then sometimes those challenges can feel a bit overwhelming.
Wonderful. A wonderful start, Annette. I, as you know, when I founded Purple Space nearly 10 years ago, I created the organisation on a premise that helping people with disabilities to build their inner confidence and resilience through toolkits and collateral and storytelling, etc., was as important as our role in delivering leadership know-how to disability employee resource groups. And through this Confident Conversation series, we're meeting extraordinary individuals like yourself who have had amazing careers, but have also navigated some very difficult moments in their life. And so I wonder if we can turn a bit to your career. So you're currently with Serco. You are the Group IT Governance Director. You have an enormous brief. But you started from somewhat different beginning. So I wonder if we could start by you just sharing with the viewers and the listeners today a little bit about your story, your work story.
Yeah, of course. I grew up in Devon and I always knew that I wouldn't stay. It's beautiful and I love it, but I was always looking for something more. So I came to London for university and I studied history. Without realising that it doesn't actually qualify you for any job. So when I graduated, I joined a trainee scheme with a bank. And as part of that management trainee scheme, then I started to get a bit more into IT. I got some exposure to technology and I made the transition into IT roles. And I started pretty much with the basics. So yeah. I used to run around with a screwdriver, fixing printers. And it was a fantastic opportunity. The IT team wanted somebody with business knowledge, which I'd had because I'd been working in the business departments. And I developed and picked up the IT skills and I found I loved it. So I progressed on from fixing printers through a number of different roles within IT, in business analysis, project management, program management, and ended up running a department, and then moved across organizations into different IT leadership roles. And what I found with those leadership roles is often there's a transformation element. So as an IT leader, either as a CIO or any other senior IT leader, you're often brought in when there are issues with the existing structure and solutions. So what I found was that as well as running IT, then I ended up doing transformation. So I moved from the bank that I'd been working with into the Lloyds insurance market, working in a couple of companies in Lloyds. I then moved on to Virgin Money. From Virgin Money, I moved to EMI when they were purchased by private equity. And that was a huge transformation program. That was my first opportunity to do an interim role and to really go in and just do business transformation. From there, I moved to Asda into another senior IT role when Asda were part of Walmart. And that was fascinating, working for an American company with a huge operation in the UK. And then from there, I moved to Serco in 2013. My role when I joined Serco was Chief Technology Officer. And then once I became paralyzed a few months later, when I returned, I moved into the group role that I'm in now.
Yeah. So I'm going to tuck into your story with paralysis in a moment. In terms of your career, obviously, transformation is where it's at. What is it about the process of transforming systems or people or product? What is it that you love so much?
I think at heart, I'm really a problem solver. I think I love a seemingly intractable problem that needs a clear structure and a simple solution. And so I think I'm attracted to challenging situations. And I think my strength is in coming up with a simple plan that's straightforward to execute and then getting everybody to buy into it. So I think it's that kind of huge challenge that just looks like it can't be fixed.
I love that. You know, there's an expression, I'm a solution looking for a problem.
Yeah.
You remind me of that. Wonderful. So look, let's start at the beginning in terms of your story of disability. You have paralysis. You share with us, how did that happen?
So I mentioned that I joined Serco in early 2013. And to be honest, I was in rude good health. I've always been lucky to be really healthy. I exercise. I've always been regular at the gym. I don't smoke. I drink a little, but no kind of reason for me to be unwell. About 9 months into my career at Serco, I was sat at my desk on a conference call one Friday morning, and I got a pain in my right shoulder. I couldn't work out why I had a pain. So I excused myself from the call and sort of stood up to stretch to see if, you know, I thought maybe it was a trapped nerve. I spoke to my colleague beside me, Rosie, and she thought that something might not be quite right. So she said, "I'll get you a glass of water. You don't look quite right." She was back in a minute or two, and when she came back, I realised I couldn't lift my arms up. So at that point, she was a bit concerned and wanted to call 999. So I still thought it was a trapped nerve because my husband had had one a few months beforehand, and so I thought I knew what I was talking about. Her logic was that people should be able to move their arms. So she phoned 999. And luckily, there was a paramedic in the area, and our office is in the middle of nowhere, so I don't quite know how. A paramedic came within a couple of minutes. He took a look at me and couldn't work out why I couldn't move my arms. And then also, luckily, an ambulance came with him a few minutes later. So I walked out to the ambulance with the crew, and they were going to do some more tests to try and work out what was wrong with my arms. When I got into the ambulance, I started to feel like I couldn't breathe. So the ambulance driver said, "You're probably just having a panic attack. Just relax." So I said, "Let me stand up and I'll see. See if I can take a deeper breath." And I stood up, and with that, my legs just stopped working. And that was when they realized that I couldn't breathe because my lungs had stopped working. And the paramedic, bless him, put a bag on my mouth and sustained me for oxygen whilst they whisked me to a local hospital. And he genuinely saved my life. And had I been anywhere else, pretty much other than work, I wouldn't have been, I wouldn't be here. And I was due to have worked at home that day. But luckily, my boss called me into the office because there was an emergency. So I guess within 15 minutes, I was completely paralyzed from the neck down. They took me to a neurological intensive care unit in Southampton and ran a battery of tests overnight. And then the following morning, the neurologist came to see me. And his words stick in my mind, that he said, "You're completely paralyzed from the neck down and it's permanent. I don't want you to be under any illusion that there is any hope of recovery." Those were his words. So at that point then, my first thought was, I need to get home and I need to get to work. If I'm going to be paralyzed, then I need to be able to get on with my life. I couldn't speak because I couldn't breathe. I was ventilated. So they had a letter board with the letters of the alphabet, and I had to make a noise as much as I could as they pointed to the letters to spell out words. So I could make a kind of noise like Skippy. So I spelt out, "Get me home, get me to work. That's your job." And bless him, he stood up to the challenge and he worked with me for the month that I was there to try to maximize my chance of not recovery, but just a good existence. And they did a brilliant job. They ventilated me really well. They took care of me and I was in good health. Bizarrely, after about 2 weeks, I started to get movement back. It started in my left toe. I found I could wriggle my left toe. And I tried explaining it, but the physio didn't believe me. She thought it was just a spasm. So then I found that I could move my left thumb. And when she was holding my hand to do some stretches, I grabbed hold of her with my thumb. And then I managed to convince them that these movements were genuine movements and not just spasms. So the first couple of weeks, completely paralyzed. And then from the second couple of weeks onwards, then I started to make small recoveries. And every day, a little bit of muscle would return.
And I want to come back to that initial reaction. Get me back home and get me back to work. Now, knowing you now, that doesn't surprise me. But that is, a massive life change. Quite a stark description from your doctor. On the one hand, a courageous thing to say to you, and on the other hand, a helpful thing to say. But for me, what I'm interested in is, what did you draw on? You know, what was your default personality that you were drawing on to say so instinctively, "Get me back to work"?
I don't. My husband always says that I'm a very driven person. It's hard to know yourself, isn't it? I find it hard to kind of describe myself. So I think I'm probably driven. I think also my desire for problem solving kicked in. I guess it's the point earlier we were talking about, in some ways, around transformation. Yeah. It was really strangely easy to accept the news. There was at no point where I ever felt this isn't happening. So I got over the initial, this has happened really quickly.
Yeah.
And then I think all my kind of work training kicked in.
I get you. And you've talked about how you've adapted your house and, you know, how you've made your lifestyle work for you. Clearly that's part of your need to find purpose and to drive. Tell us about your work colleagues at Serco. You speak so highly, and we have the very great pleasure at Purple Space of working with Serco. So it doesn't surprise me at all. But tell me a little bit about colleague reactions. What were the helpful and enabling things that people did around you that made it easier for you to get back?
The first thing was, given that I'd only been there 9 months, there was a huge outpouring from people. Dozens of people sent me cards and gifts. It was amazing. And because I was in the intensive care unit so long, which is unusual, most people are in and out of ITU.
Yeah.
But the team put me in a corner bed, and they decorated the wall with all the cards, which was amazing. Homerton Hospital were brilliant. And I think that was the first thing that was really amazing, was that how many people were so supportive and actively encouraging. That was phenomenal. I think the second thing that was amazing was that my boss and the HR team stayed really close with me throughout.
That's key, isn't it?
It was. I was at the time where I had two bosses. I had a solid and a dotted. They both visited me in hospital in intensive care. And I was fully wired. When you see people in their hospital dramas with everything, I was one of those. And to their credit, they came to visit me. The HR director visited me regularly. She kept in touch with me. After intensive care, I spent 6 months in rehabilitation and a spinal cord unit at Stanmore. And throughout that 10-month period, she visited me regularly and kept in touch. I had a laptop that was brought in so I could keep up to date with my emails. I attended meetings as well, so I joined in team meetings. After the first, I guess, month or so, then I started to join team meetings on silent, but just so that I could hear what was going on. So that kind of sense of keeping in touch, of being in contact with the company, was really important.
Yeah. So you're signalling from the get-go, you were making it easier for the business to hear that work really mattered to you.
Yeah.
Which presumably then made it easier for them to find the ways by which you could do that, that interface.
Yeah.
What have you learnt about others in the face of disability brought on by quite dramatic circumstances? As you look around, you know, what have you seen colleagues do that you would bottle and encourage other great allies to do?
I think probably I've realised that people are kind.
Yeah.
So most people want to help. One of my mantras at work has always been, assume positive intent. So something that I got, that a message I took away from a training course really early in my career, that you do need to assume positive intent. And so I think I realised that most people generate from a kind place. They don't always get it right. And so I think the challenge is to work with people's kindness and get what you want from it. I think that's the biggest thing that I've learned, is that most people do genuinely want to help.
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't always feel like it.
Yeah, but wise advice. Sometimes we can get in a pickle about how other people may perceive us, for example. What about those moments where you've had to proactively ask for an adjustment or something to be done differently around you? How have you approached that? I mean, you're a senior business leader, so you know, we may be forgiven for thinking perhaps it's easier for you, but it won't always be easy. How do you approach an ask?
As straightforwardly as possible. Yeah. I think if in any situation, if you try to dress up what you need with kind of over-explaining, then it just gets uneasy for everybody. So I think I just try and do it as naturally as possible. So could you move the table, or you know, could I have a different height table, or can you help me adjust it? I think the best thing with everybody is just to be dead straightforward. And I have been right from the very outset. I guess you know, when you go back to the get me home, get me to work, that's been my approach right throughout.
Yeah. Yep. The very much a sense of the old Annette in the new Annette. You know, this.
Yeah.
I mean, we all have our
same
default.
Same Annette, really.
Yeah. But what we all have our default personalities. And I think what's interesting about the Purple Space community is seeing how sometimes it's just business as usual. And sometimes we have learned something. There's been a moment or a key challenge. I want to talk a little bit about what others can learn from you. Serco, like other businesses, build great communities of support for people with disabilities or people who experience neurodivergence. As you look out and across to your communities or indeed in other employers, what would be some of the lessons that you have learnt that you would pass on to others as they navigate disability at work?
I think I would start with being really clear about what you need to succeed. Yeah. There is no benefit in holding back. So it's really easy to just kind of live with it and think and hope it goes away. So I think the best thing is to be really clear about what will make it work without being kind of unduly forceful or belligerent, but just know what you need, work out what you need, and then tell people what you need. Most people want to help, so it's not a big ask.
And what do you do? I mean, you've heard me talk often about sometimes the soft bigotry of low expectation. You must have come across that. I mean, on the one hand, you don't take prisoners. But on the other hand, you must also have experienced what I call other people's stuff. Yeah. What do you do with that? And how would you encourage others to bypass it or move around it? Or
generally, I think I probably ignore it.
You just ignore it? Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. You don't... I guess I've always thought that in life, people can only bully you if you let them. And I know it's a bit of a generalization, but if you use that as a starting principle, people can only treat you the way they want to if you let them. So I think be very straightforward about what you're able to do and what you're not able to do.
Wise words.
Rather than just accepting their kind of their soft ambitions for you.
Yeah. Wise words.
Tough ones. Not always easy to do.
Yep. Have there been moments even now where you've had to check yourself to do that a little bit?
Yes. I think nothing changes fundamentally when you become disabled. Certainly nothing has changed fundamentally for me. And so I'm still the same old kind of bag of strengths and weaknesses that I ever was. Yeah. And so I have to remind myself to be confident in my abilities in the same way as I did at the outset of my career, in the middle of it, and right now. I still have the same sense of concern that one day I might get found out, just like everybody else. I'm female in IT. I have an arts background and I'm in IT. So I've come from a career where I've not been out of the sort of standard identikit mould, I guess. And now I'm paralysed. So
that you can use that to your advantage because you're a mixture
I guess
of identities.
I am. But I'm also still just me. At the end of the day, I'm the skills that I bring to my job. So I think with all of those challenges, I just need to, some days I do need to remind myself that I'm still good. And luckily, I have a boss and a husband who both remind me that I am still good as well.
Annette, you know at Purple Space, we're building collateral and know-how and resources in this Confident Conversation series, as we're doing today, to help those that come behind us. And we shared with you one of the Confident Conversation guides where we talk about the fundamentals and the hurdles. Did any of those speak to you?
One of them really spoke to me. The one that resonated for me was about sharing your story. It was really difficult for me to share my story. If I think back, when I returned to work, I think my approach was almost just keep on. It's the kind of keep calm and carry on approach. So I didn't really talk much about being disabled. I just carried on with my job. I just assumed nobody else would be interested. It's a personal drama for me. But then after a few years, there was one of our execs wanted to start a disability network. And approached me to ask me to share my story. I resisted, to be fair.
Why? What was that about?
But I couldn't see why anybody else would be interested. What happened to me was horrid. It's dreadful. But it's luckily really, really rare. It happened, this type of spinal cord injury happens very infrequently. And when it does, people usually die because the results are so quick, the onset is so quick. And so I couldn't really see why the story would be relevant. And also, I think I'm not really a reflective thinker. For me, life is all about the future and the opportunities and the possibilities. I couldn't see why trawling back over kind of 3 or 4 years would be helpful for anyone. But then I was persuaded to do it. And when I did it, there was a huge outpouring of feedback from people. And I think what I realised was that it gave people a chance, my colleagues a chance, to talk about how they felt about the disability, when I'd not really given them the space to do so.
Very powerful. Really powerful. So, Annette, you are the co-chair of the Disability Network at Serco, Serco Unlimited. Could you tell us a little bit about the successes that you've clocked up, the approach that Serco has when it comes to building a disability-confident business?
It's been an interesting journey. So obviously it started with sharing my story. And that was the kickstart for forming the network. And we started the network with relatively modest ambitions. So my co-chair and I Julie. Our incoming ambition was to try and make a difference to the lives of people with a disability. And we thought, modestly, if we could make it better for one person, then we would have felt like we'd done a good job. I think what we realised as we went into it was that we had much more scope to influence in the organisation than we'd realised. So by working with our colleagues in the various line functions, we were able to make changes to the way in which Serco does things. So if I think about our colleagues in HR, we're really keen and really supportive to improve the way that we do recruitment, the way that we provide workplace adjustments, the way that we help disabled colleagues feel comfortable at work. And by working with them, we've changed the policies, the processes, and the procedures so that it's a more level playing field. And we used things like our membership of Purple Space to help us understand what's industry best practice. We joined the Valuable 500 so that we had a really clear mandate from the CEO that we were serious about this. And we used the Disability Confidence Scheme that the government runs to help us drive change and to validate that the change that we'd made was good. So we went through the three stages of the Disability Confident process over a period of years. And by using the checklists and by using the external validation, we were able to be sure that we were doing the right thing. So it went from being initially quite modest and a little bit homespun to being really quite strategic and making change across the whole organisation. And that was amazing. I never envisaged that by just sitting down one Sunday afternoon and writing my story, we would be able to make a change across the organisation. But I think we could do it because we were pushing at an open door.
It's wonderful. And I've had the privilege of seeing that progress over time. And I think one of my takeaways as I watch the Serco story is how much store you put into listening to your own people. You know, one of the key priorities that came from our global summit last October, first world's only global summit for disability ERG leaders. And one of three things that they want to see is businesses learn directly from their own people. And I think Serco epitomises that through Serco Unlimited and the other ways by which you learn from your people. Wonderful stuff. So I've got two last questions. Our time flies. We could be here till midnight, Annette, however. So two questions, if I may. The one is about language, if I may. You know, your thoughts about the role of language, but also you had an extraordinary career. You've named some of the brands that you've worked for. I suppose having worked with many chief executives, mentors, coaches over the years, the best piece of career advice you've been given. So two very different questions. Language, is it helpful, useful? Do you duck it? Do you have any thoughts about the role of language? And then the best piece of career advice.
Do you mean the language around disability?
Yeah.
I'm a big advocate for plain speaking when it comes to disability. I dislike any of the euphemisms around kind of other abled or...
Yeah, differently abled.
Differently abled.
Yeah.
Paralysed is fine. Disabled is fine. These words have a meaning in our language for a purpose. So we should use them. I don't think that we should shy away from being very clear about the challenges of being disabled. But I also don't think we should see it as something that limits us. So let's be open and let's be straightforward And let's describe things with the right words so that everybody understands. And that's been one of our kind of underpinning approaches right from the outset with the network, with Serco Unlimited, but also for me. I've been very clear. But I'd say also, you don't need to go into too much detail. So, you know, it's sufficient for people to know that I'm paralyzed, that I have a spinal cord injury. They don't want to know, and certainly don't need to know, some of the more kind of challenging details that that go with that. Because in the same way as we don't generally share our medical history, there's no need for really for people to need to understand some of the more complicated medical bits that go with your body not working properly.
I hear you. Best piece of advice ever. I'm sure you've had a few bits of advice over the years, but what would you offer?
I think the best piece of advice I've had, and one that I've used most extensively, is to try to learn from other people's lessons, other people's experience. Because I think back over my career, if you try to start from scratch every time, then you don't take with you the kind of vast body of knowledge that exists. And I hear it a lot, that people discount the advice and information of others. They prefer to find their own way. Whereas I've always thought that if I can find the smart people in the organization, ask them some important questions, then I can learn from them. And then I can use their learning to move forwards. And I think that's probably been one of the things that's underpinned my approach to my career. So go and find the smart people, to ask them questions and listen to the answers.
That's very
wise. And then
wise.
Take away what they tell you and use it.
Yeah. Sometimes the necessity to sort of subrogate ego in the necessity to learn from others. Wonderful. We are nearly done, Annette. It's tradition that we ask our guests to craft or fashion a question or a musing to our next guest. What would you like to offer?
I'd like our next guest to muse on what's the next challenge for disability networks. What does the future of disability look like? What's the future of the disability debate?
I love it. Wonderful. Annette, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this. Beautiful insight. So thank you for your time and thank you for being you. And I look forward to the next time.
Thank you, Kate.
We are on a mission to cascade helpful insights and information about how to build inner confidence when you have lived experience of disability, ill health or neurodivergence. So if you want to learn how to have better conversations with your employer or your manager, visit www.purplespace.org. And do one thing as a consequence of your own learnings having listened to Annette. Let's build a better, more equitable world for everybody.